Hey, it's the Daily Blip. I'm Scott Johnson. Welcome. Hope you guys are having a good one this week. Got some Last of Us 2 news. You know, did you know they were making a sequel? I'd kind of forgotten. I thought they were... Why did I think they were done? Like, I thought the devs came out and said, we think this is a standalone story. We don't think it should ever be a sequel. For whatever reason, I remember that. But Last of Us Part 2 has a bunch of connections, I guess, to Westworld now. The game's story is being co-written by Westworld writer Hallie Cross, is that how you say it? And now we've learned that an actress from the show is also in the game. Shannon Woodward, who plays Elsie in Westworld, has a role in Last of Us Part 2. She announced on Twitter. A nice picture of herself. She's got some mocap dots on her because they're doing some mocap. She's hanging out with game director Neil Druckmann. I'm trying to remember who Elsie is. Is she the one that's... I got it. She's the one from... Raising Hope. Okay. We don't actually know what the status of her in Westworld is, but anyway. We know that she's in the game, and we have no other idea what's happening. But in other news, the first game director, Bruce Straley, is not there for the sequel. Game's coming to PlayStation 4, by the way. Doesn't have a release date. Probably coming to Xbox. Do you think it'd be a Sony exclusive? We'll see how Scorpio does. Anyway, this game lets you play as Ellie. First game had you playing as Joel. No word on whether or not it's the same game, just you playing as Ellie and not as Joel. Probably not, right? That'd be dumb. Hey, I got more for you later. Stay tuned. Get in your car, drive to Toys R Us this weekend, park the car, go inside, because it looks like they're getting Nintendo Switches back in stock. But you gotta do it this weekend. It's been hard to find, man. Every store in the U.S. has been out of the damn things, but a representative of the company, that is Toys R Us, I should say, are expecting to have the consoles in stock in all of their stores across the states Sunday, April 9th. I do not know what that means for people outside of the States United. I don't know about Europe. Do you guys even have Toys R Us's in Europe? Toys R Us's? What's the plural of Toys R Us? Is it Toys R Us's or Toys R I? Anyway, they told GameSpot that supply will be limited, so shoppers are encouraged to line up at their stores before they open at 10 a.m. local time. And it's like other stores, you can probably expect to be in those lines for a long time and for the stock to go quickly, and you probably to walk away without one. But hey, I'm just saying, maybe you have a friend that works at the Toys R Us. Maybe you can convince said friend to offer you a little freebie there. Or not a freebie, an opportunity to get ahead in the line. I'm not saying do anything unsavory. Don't do anything shady, okay? But if you have a friend and they can hold one, I think that's probably a good idea. In Australia, they just got some restock. First time since their initial launch. And, man, when it's the fastest selling console in the history of Nintendo, there's going to be issues, man. That's the way this cookie crumbles. So I'm just saying, your best chance tomorrow, Toys R Us, line up before 10, wait in line, and be prepared to be disappointed. But maybe lucky. Who knows? So, what other things that you know of have 65 million people involved in them? Think of something like... I can't think of anything where 65 million people are active with a certain kind of thing. According to Niantic, Pokemon Go has 65 million monthly active users still. That's huge. And they are claiming there's a ton to come, including co-op play. What in the hell's that even look like, I wonder? But even though it dropped at launch, $65 million, that's pretty good. Those are jaw-dropping compared to other stuff. This was set at the London Games Festival this week, as they still have that many active, that's active monthly users, not just dudes who what have accounts and don't ever play anymore. That's people on that thing playing it. I don't know how much they play over the month. Is that one login per month? I mean, these things are hard to define. Here is the quote they mentioned. By the way, they took home the best mobile and handheld game at the BAFTAs this week. And if you're a fan of the network here, you know that Terpster, I do stuff with Terpster on the Instance and other things, and you'll know. Or if you saw those, you'll know that he got up and did a little presentation at the BAFTAs, which is pretty rad. You can go find that video. Dropped a couple of jokes that kind of bombed, but I love him for it. Anyway, they say this. This is the company. We owe the continued momentum and recognition to the dedicated players exploring the world and creating adventures together in Pokemon Go. Each and every award Pokemon Go has won is a testament to the game's awesome and supportive community. Or one might say overly patient community. Anyway, they say a lot of stuff is coming, including cooperative gameplay. We're still at the beginning of the journey. There's lots more to come. With spring arriving in the Northern Hemisphere, players can look forward to an all-new cooperative social gameplay experience in Pokemon Go that will give trainers new and exciting reasons to get back in the sunshine. I, good people, will believe that when I see it. Uncharted 4 is the game winner at the BAFTAs, the big game winner. It won Game of the Year, in fact, at the... So what does that stand for, BAFTA? British Art... I don't know what it stands for. I've never known. They do video game awards at this thing. Anyway. And Uncharted 4, Thief's End, picked up another big-time award. This is not their first this year, which is expected to be Naughty Dog's final Uncharted game. It won Best Overall Game at the BAFTAs, the organization announced. The other nominees for Best Game were Firewatch, Inside, Overwatch, Stardew Valley, and Titanfall 2. Firewatch and Overwatch, two watches in there, I guess. Anyway, although Uncharted 4 took home the top honor, Playdead's indie game Inside scored the most awards overall, bringing home 4 for artistic achievement, game design, narrative, and original property. Did you guys play that? It's good. It's real good. Did you guys play Overcooked? Because that also took 2 awards from the British game. Two awards. One for Best British Game and Best Family Game. And they had something called the AMD Esports Audience Award. Ugh, I don't like the sound of that. Was won by Clash Royale. Other games in that category included Counter-Strike Go, Dota 2, League of Legends, Overwatch, and Street Fighter V. They are mistaken in not putting Heroes of the Storm on there. I'm biased, but that game's better than half the stuff I just listed. For Best Multiplayer, Overwatch won the BAFTA, while Pokemon Go came out on top for the mobile category. We talked about that last segment. And The Last Guardian was recognized for its audio achievement, which is a little bit weird. They gave it for music, I guess. And then finally, a game designer, Brenda Romero, was presented with the special award in, quote, recognition of her outstanding creative contribution to the industry and for her illustrious career in game design, her advocacy for the art and creative process behind game making, and her commitment to encouraging the next generation of talent in the industry. Just to give you a little throwback, last year, Bethesda's Fallout 4 took home the top prize. And in 2015, Destiny won Best Game of the Year. I'm not sure I agree with those two. So how will I feel? I don't know. I think Uncharted maybe deserves it. That was a hell of a game. But those other two, they had their moments. Destiny had a couple of moments there. Fallout 4, you know, another Fallout game, but... Anyway, hey, like the channel, share it with your friends, and check out the app on Android and iOS now. It's free, and it's the best way to listen to Anchor. If you'd like to get all these compiled into one thing, I have been putting it on the Frog Pants mega feed as well, and on the Boop feed, which you can find at frogpants.com/BOOP. You can subscribe to that if you prefer to get it as a podcast. Otherwise, keep checking it out here. I'll be back tomorrow with more. We'll see you then. Everybody, Scott Johnson here, and this is the Daily Blip. And we begin today's news with a story that's circulating everywhere about GameStop investigating a serious breach of compromising credit card information. The retailer has confirmed the probe. It isn't saying what was stolen. All I know is I got my Nintendo Switch on their website, and I'm nervous. Although I use PayPal, so I don't know if that made a difference. Anyway, I've changed passwords and we're hoping that that's good enough. But anyway, GameStop is investigating the possibility of hackers may have stolen credit card and customer information from its website. This according to a journalist, Brian Krebs, who talked to GameStop. The Grapevine, Texas-based company, acknowledged that it has been alerted to the claim of payment card data stolen from GameStop.com and being offered for sale on the black market. That being the Grapevine. Quote, that day, a leading security firm was engaged to investigate these claims. GameStop has and will continue to work nonstop to address this report and take appropriate measures to eradicate any issue that may be identified. Well, I freaking hope so, dude. This could be bad. Some of the numbers that were verified as taken, CVV2 numbers, that's the three-digit verification code on the back of your physical card. That was among some of the data siphoned off to GameStop.com. And the data could include, obviously, credit cards, but also expiration dates, names, and addresses of the cardholders themselves. Bleh. It says here there's a reason people aren't, or stores rather, and companies aren't allowed to store CVVs in their own databases. The fact that hackers were able to intercept those security codes elevates the severity of the incident significantly, says Vishal Gupta, the CEO of the security firm Seclore. I think they talked to Polygon about that. Anyway, there's some concern, and they say they regret any concern the situation may cause our customers. A concern? They may have my credit card data, or at least somebody's. I think there's a little concern. And rightly so. I hope they get this worked out. Assassin's Creed 3, Far Cry 4. You've heard of those games. Those are big Ubisoft games. The director of both of those games is out of here. Alex Hutchinson is no longer heading up those projects and instead has left Ubisoft and is now heading up his own brand new studio. He is a veteran of Ubisoft, been there for a very long time. His new studio, I don't think it has a name yet, does it? I don't think so. But he's known mainly for Assassin's Creed 3, not that great, and Far Cry 4, okay, I guess. He announced his departure from the gaming giant on Twitter this week. This news came out of IGN. He says, we're extremely proud of all that we've achieved on Far Cry and Assassins, but very excited to build something new, he said. He's starting a new company. Oh, he does have a name. Typhoon Studios. I missed that the first time through. With former EA and Warner Brothers producer Reed Schneider and, quote, some other wonderful people. We are hard at work imagining a brand new world to inflict on all of you, so stay tuned, he says. We don't know anything about the game that they're starting with, except they want to inflict it on us. He made headlines in 2012, by the way, when he said the pursuit of AAA games is, quote, kind of a cancerous growth that will leave AAA blockbusters as nothing more than Last of the Dinosaurs in 2013. He also said something similar, claiming the AAA games were dying out. This, a guy who has run the production of multiple AAA games, or at least as they're defined currently in the industry. Before joining Ubisoft in 2010, Hutchinson worked as a creative director at Electronic Arts and Maxis, where his credits include things like Spore, The The Sims 2, and Army of Two, the 40th day. Again, Spore and Army of Two.
Ooh.
I'm not saying you can't go out and do something cool. I'm just saying some rough stuff on your resume there, buddy. Anyway, when that new game becomes available, then we'll all jump in, right? Or will we? Will we not care? Should he have stayed? Will Ubisoft be better off without him? What is the next Assassin's Creed game going to be like? It's about time for one, right? Shouldn't there be one announced, maybe E3 this year? They skipped a year. I think it will be. Last one we got was Syndicate. And we don't know who's in charge now. But fare thee well, Hutchinson. May you find grass that is greener on the other side. Are you good at League of Legends, and are you going to college, and are you trying to figure out a way to pay yourself through? Good news, everybody. Right up the road for me, the University of Utah is offering League of Legends scholarships, and they've got four other games that are not yet announced that they'll be adding to the roster. Nobody knows what those are yet. I could guess. I could throw out a few names, and you'd probably go, yeah, that seems likely, but, you know, why speculate? Let's wait and see what's going on. This is pretty exciting. They're going to do a varsity esports program, and they're starting with League of Legends. Now, you're thinking to yourself, well, I'd sure like to go to school and not have to pay for it. I'd like to be like a football player, except I'm not very athletic, but I sure can play the video games. Well, here's your chance. And look, that's a school with a long history of really cool people coming out of it. The founders of Adobe went to the University of Utah. Nolan Bushnell was there. A whole bunch of Atari guys were there. The first artificial heart was there. It was one of the first four schools included in the internet test way back in 1969. Y'all are, you know, it's a good school. Y'all have a good time here. I don't know why I'm saying y'all. We don't talk like that out here. At any rate, they've been inundated with phone calls. Things have been real exciting down there. Everybody expects this to be kind of a big deal. So I'm just saying, if you are interested, you should look it up. If you go to unews.utah.edu, you will find the whole story about varsity esports coming to the U and what that might mean, not just for the University of Utah, but perhaps collegiate esports around the country. Will this establish a norm or a standard that others can either add to or follow the lead from? Don't know. And also, what are these other four games? I'll bet a couple of them have guns in it. What do you guys think? Anyway, there it is. University of Utah holding it down, making it happen. And very, very soon, good luck to everyone who tries out. Finally today, I had a chance to dig into Thimbleweed Park today. This is a point-and-click adventure developed by Ron Gilbert and Gary Winnick. It's in it, and it's everywhere. Microsoft Windows, Linux, OS X, iOS, Xbox One, Android. I guess PlayStation 4 version planned in a couple of months. And it was originally revealed on November. In November. And they had a Kickstarter campaign for it. Did pretty well, and the actual release was on the 30th, and I finally picked it up and decided to use it for our Saturday stream that my daughter and I do called Story Mode Saturdays. And you could call it the spiritual successor to Gilbert and Winnick's previous games. Those would be Maniac Mansion from 1987, the original Secret of Monkey Island in 1990, very similar graphic adventure. Gameplay-wise, certainly graphically, they've gone for a, you know, very pixelated late 80s, early 90s kind of vibe. And really, really like it. We are only a couple hours in, and I feel like we've barely scratched the surface. It's got the humor you expect. I think the art is great and goofy and weirdly pretty, but trippy. I like the verb-based action system of those old games. You know, use a thing on a thing. you know, that kind of stuff. I think it's great. And we're going to play through the entire thing. And I'm told, at minimum, we're looking at like 30 hours in this thing. So, very curious where it's going to take us. And if we finish it or not. But so far, so good. Ron Gilbert, Gary Winnick, those guys are legends. If you don't know who they are, look them up. Check out their Wikipedia pages and you'll be going, oh yeah, these guys, they're awesome. It is very much taking stabs at Electronic Arts, or not Electronic Arts, LucasArts, rather, where they both used to work. They were both with Lucasfilm at the time, or LucasArts. And what do they call it, Carter? Mucus? Mucus coughs or mucus barfs or something like that. Mucus farts, that's not it. Oh, mucus phlegm, that's it. Like Lucasfilm, but mucus phlegm. It's pretty funny. And it's great. I like it a lot. I'll let you guys know more as I play it more. But so far, so good. And it really took me back to a time that I used to love in games. And it might for you as well. $19 on Steam, priced competitively or comparably on all the other platforms. Cheaper on iOS and Android, of course. Totally worth your time. We'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Blip. We'll see you guys then. Good morning and welcome to the Daily Blip. I'm Scott Johnson. How many of you, I mean, by a raise of hands, which I can't see, but how many of you downloaded and have played / purchased PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds? Well, I did, and I'm going to talk about it, but more importantly, there's news about it. It's selling twice as fast as DayZ did at launch, and has already breached the 1 million sold on Steam marker. And that thing is alpha as crap, man. Like super alpha early beta, and yet it's selling like banana cakes. I think I understand why, though. So I installed it, and there is something about jumping out of a plane and figuring out which little farmhouse you want to go to look scavenge for, there you go, weapons, and you know, armor and stuff, and it's a battle royale game. It isn't just a, you know, DayZ's like a survival game, right? This is that, but not really. This is like, get in, there's 100 of you, last man standing wins, and you basically are the Hunger Games times 1,000 is how this works. And I am bad at it. I often get a gun, get so excited, I come running out of a room with it, and someone's there on the floor with a shotgun, and they take me out and take my stuff. And I have to go back to the lobby and do it again. But having played 5, 6, 7 rounds, whatever it has been so far, I can honestly say I can see what they're onto here. They have captured a gameplay loop that I think is appealing to a lot of people. Obviously, they've sold 1 million copies. 1 million copies of the game in the first 16 days on Steam. It is $29, or is it 19? Well, whatever it is, it's probably worth it. They seem to be updating it all the time. They have lots of plans, and you guys should check it out. And the only other thing I'd say is it's a terrible name. PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds is a stupid name. There, I said it. Come at me, bro. Up your Game Boys and get ready, because the Marshadow is on its way. Marshadow, a brand new Pokemon, or Pokeman, pocket monster. Anyway, he's on his way to Pokemon Sun and Moon, and if you want to capture it, there's ways to do it. In fact, there's an entire YouTube video that I went through that told me everything I needed to know about capturing this elusive new Pokemon. It is the new Pokemon called Marshadow, like marshmallow, but with shadow in it. It has been known about since November, so this isn't news in terms of that, but now we know what's going on. His moves were revealed. The new teaser video means Marshadow will be finally available soon. Data miners pulled out Marshadow's vitals a long time ago, And now the creature has been formally announced. He is a fighting/ghost type. And you're in. So go search just YouTube for it. You'll find it. There's some. He's got these moves. He's got a Z move, the Soul Stealing 7-Star Strike. Every character has a Z move, I guess. And the video shows that as well. Basically, it shows how your competing Pokemon's going to die. Are you still playing Moon and Sun? Because I kind of fell off. I wanted to keep going, and I don't know what it is about Pokemon. I always start them. It always starts out strong for me, and then I peter out. And I think I might have the reasoning as to why. I think what it might be, the battles themselves have all this mandatory animation I can't skip. And I think after a while, the repetition of that just gets under my skin and I can't do it anymore. I have a very short attention span. I'm like a flea. And so I think that's where I've gone south on the Pokemon games. Also, you know, I kind of missed that generation. When that hit for kids, I was entering my 20s. I was in my late teens, early 20s. So it just wasn't for me. And I'm okay admitting that. But maybe you, listening to me now, are thinking, yeah, Marshadow's the guy. I'm going to get him. Now you can. And good luck. In more Nintendo news, Nintendo Direct is returning on Wednesday. I'll be in Las Vegas that day. Oh, I have news on that here in a minute. I'll tell you about how we're going to handle the daily blip while I'm gone. The answer is I'm going to keep doing them, but they'll be remote ones. Anyway, the spotlight is on ARMS and Splatoon 2. Do you remember ARMS? They showed this off at the big Switch event earlier this year. Was it last year? No, it was earlier this year. It was January. With the big, long, extendable ARMS deal. That looked pretty fun. Extendable ARMS deal is my Ronald Reagan cover band. Anyway. Anyway. That's going to be on showcase during this thing. And then Splatoon 2, which has already been through a big public test. Did you guys try to get into that? Because I did, and I had a horrible time getting in. I don't know what the deal was. Bad night or something. It's still on my Switch, so maybe that'll still happen for me. But anyway, this is going to be April 12th, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. And it's been a while since we've had a Nintendo Direct. The company says they're going to focus their entire event is going to be focused on Nintendo 3DS and Nintendo Switch titles to come. So they're still towing that 3DS line, man. Still saying there's plenty to come for that. On display for the Switch, we will see a lot about ARMS and Splatoon 2. These, again, are religious releases for the Switch. And they have not given us dates for either, so I'm guessing that you use your Nintendo Direct to tell us when we can actually get this stuff. Polygon got to go hands-on with Splatoon 2 in March and said that their biggest takeaway is that the stylish squid shooter was more of the same, and they mean that as a compliment. That's a quote. As for ARMS, I've talked to some people who played it, and they really liked it. So I think that has yet to be confirmed, but it seems like there's something there. Other games, if you're going to guess, maybe show up there, like a Fire Emblems game, The Shadows of Valentia, and Ever Oasis. Those games have been talked about, bandied about, but we don't know if they'll talk about those there. Those are both due for the 3DS this year, so maybe that'll have something to do with it. Anyway, on Wednesday, that live stream will go live on Twitch and various other places, YouTube Gaming. I'm sure all the gaming sites are going to have links as well. And I will be trying to follow it from Las Vegas. More on that later. We'll talk to you guys soon. Minecraft has been around since, what, 2009, I believe. I think that's when Mojang, or at the time, just... what's his name? Just by himself. He didn't have a company yet, I don't think. Did Notch have a company then? I don't think so. I think it was his basement. It was Notch and My Basement presents Minecraft in 2009. And since then, I've always wondered, why haven't they done like a full-blown store? Like a player-created item store, like hats or skins that you see in things like... What does this? Counter-Strike does that. That other game that Valve made. Oh, Team Fortress 2 does that. You know what I mean? Like, that seems like perfect. Perfect place to get, like, mods and skins and, like, voice packs and all that kind of stuff. Well, they're getting a real money creator marketplace now. All these years later. Nearly 11 years later, would it be? Is that right? 2009? No, that's not right. 09 would be... Yeah, we're not quite there. Whatever it is. However many years. I can't think how many years that is. Anyway, they're getting a marketplace for player-made content this spring with an update for mobile and Windows 10 PC. Approved creators will be able to sell things like maps and texture packs and other things. And the player will get a portion of the profits. So, they're going to have some partner creators at the beginning with things like Blockworks. It's kind of like RPG-style maps that those guys do. And there's a pixel artist named Anija Silverleaf who makes pixel art and skins, and those will also be partnered. And you'll be able to buy the content with Minecraft coins, which work kind of the same for other... It's like mobile games, like Xbox Space Points or whatever. You buy more of them with real money, and then that's the currency you use in the game. And the Discovery update for Minecraft is also bringing things like treasure maps, much-requested ability to change your bed color. This far into it, we're excited about changing bed color. All right, fine, whatever. Mojang also confirmed that if you locate a hidden forest mansion and defeat the monsters within it, you receive the Totem of Undying that keeps you alive when you should otherwise have perished. And at the end of February, Microsoft, which owns Mojang, remind you, and Minecraft, announced that the game had sold 121 million copies with 55 million people playing every month. I bought it a long time ago. I haven't played it in ages, but yeah, Minecraft, still a thing, still a threat. And now you can make your own stuff. If you like this channel, like it, favorite it, send it to your friends, and get the app on Android and iOS. And for the next couple of days, few days, I will be in Las Vegas, Nevada, and I will record from there. So don't worry, I'm not going anywhere. There'll be a little lower quality because it's just me on my phone, but very much looking forward to it. We'll see you guys then. Everybody, welcome to the Daily Blip. I'm Scott Johnson, and I am back from Las Vegas. That's right. No more me on my phone driving you guys a little bit crazy. And there were no blips yesterday because I was driving in very spotty internet areas and wasn't able to get any posted. But I am here today, back at it, on the mic, bringing you the latest, which happens to be a full trailer of the Star Wars Battlefront 2 game that is that hit today, part of the Star Wars Celebration weekend. And the reveal comes after a shorter version leaked last week. There was a brief teaser yesterday, but the entire trailer is out now. Why I'm excited is because it seems to be chock full of single-player content, which is more of what I was interested in this series to begin with. The trailer debuted at Star Wars Celebration in Orlando during the Battlefront 2 panel, which featured representatives from Criterion, Motive Studios, DICE, of course, and Lucasfilm. And the trailer claims, once again, it is all in-game footage. Looks very nice. It is narrated by Imperial Commander Iden Versio and includes Darth Maul, Yoda, Luke, Rey, and Kylo Ren. And if you want to learn more about it, go watch the trailer. It's everywhere right now. It's launching November 17th on PS4, PlayStation 4. That's right. If you have a PS4, good deal. I guess you probably already knew that. Also be coming to PC and Xbox One. I assume it'll be enhanced for PS4 Pro and Scorpio buyers. I don't know that for sure. But way more single-player focused. Obviously, the multiplayer's there. All that big-scale stuff. It appears you will be flying in ships in outer space, not just ground battles, which I think people expected. And certainly, a big sprawling story seems cool. No word yet on whether... the cast of the game, like Luke and all these people, are being played by Mark Hamill and the like, although obviously their likenesses are in there, so maybe we can expect some of that. I don't think the first game did either, but the first game didn't really have a campaign mode. Also, I could be wrong, but the Emperor who's talking during this trailer does not appear to be the actor who played the original Emperor, unless I am smoking the crack. And that could be entirely possible because I just got home from Vegas. It's possible I took a lot of secondhand crack in and didn't even know it. That's going to do it for this segment. We'll be back a little later with more. Stay tuned. Alright, so I was looking forward to this Tony Hawk Pro Skater documentary. It was up on Kickstarter, and I don't know why that interests me. I mean, Pro Skater is no longer really a big deal in terms of games. Nobody's looking forward to the next one, really. The last one kind of tanked. But I don't know why. The early versions of those games were such a breath of fresh air and were such a big deal at the time. That I'm really interested in them and in terms of their history. And it didn't meet its funding target, though. But they said they're going to make it anyway. It was actually Indiegogo, not Kickstarter. They were looking for $75,000. They failed to quite meet it. The campaign for Pretending I'm Superman, the Tony Hawk game story, only brought in $17,409. Again, it may just be the lagging interest in the Tony Hawk series in general that made it happen. But Indiegogo is not an all-or-nothing kind of deal the way Kickstarter is. So Indiegogo can work as a initial funding source. They can still walk away with the $17,409 and then find the additional funding wherever else they can get it and finish the documentary. So that appears to be what they're going to end up doing. Quote, our plan was never to entirely rely on the Indiegogo campaign as it was. If we would have received the full sum, the process of making the documentary may have gone faster, but we are still in it for the long run or the short haul regardless. Multiple sponsors have shown great interest, and because of that, we will still be able to continue, says Ralph D'Amato and Ludwig Gurr, the producers on the potential film. $75,000 doesn't seem like a lot of money, but you can do a lot with it. Especially for a small little project like this. It will feature developers and skaters who helped create everything from the first pro skater game to the most recent fifth installment that did not do that great and everything in between. And it's being produced by, of course, Ralph mentioned that. By the way, the latest one was 2015's Pro Skater 5, which was a huge disappointment. Let's hope the documentary isn't one of those. I hope it's awesome. I bet it will be. These guys seem like they know what they're doing. Anyway, check it out. See if it's something you want to support and see. I do. Nintendo has discontinued the NES Classic Edition. Some are claiming it's a victim of its own success. I don't think Nintendo knew what they were onto with this. I don't think they knew that they were going to have this mega blockbuster selling thing. I really don't think they knew that. And I think they don't want to be in the business of having to maintain that stock and that production for an indefinite amount of time, which is unfortunate because I never got my hand on one and I would really like one. The thing was only on the market for 6 months and they are now discontinuing the Classic Edition in North America anyway. We don't know about other regions, but they never provided a specific reason for it. This is all my own speculation about it just, you know, not wanting to run three SKUs. But, they've been plagued with supply issues since its launch. It sold out immediately. Shipments were immediately delayed, right? Throughout April, NOA territories Nintendo of America territories will receive the last shipments of Nintendo Entertainment Systems Classic Edition systems for the year, says Nintendo in a statement. We encourage anyone interested in obtaining the system to check with retail outlets regarding availability. We understand that it has been difficult for many consumers to find one, and for that, we apologize. We have paid close attention to consumer feedback, and we greatly appreciate the incredible level of consumer interest and support for this product. Well, apparently not enough. You're just going to not do it anymore. This is a real stinker, because I don't know if this probably means I'm not going to get one. You know, like I walk into a Target and accidentally have one fall out of nowhere. I went to a Target in Las Vegas this week, and they had official carrying cases for the Classic Edition. And so I thought, oh, well, that means, you know, they're supporting it more long term, more long haul, but I guess not. And who knows how many accessory makers have put in full production on how to, you know, expecting future stock on these things so that they can sell enough accessories for them. But, man, bummer. For those not in the know, the Classic Edition launched in November. It came with a preloaded set of games. There were 30 in there total. And they were asked at this announcement whether the classic games will be made available on the Switch or some other system. And Nintendo said only this, quote, "We have nothing to announce at this time." Oh, you guys, you're such a bummer sometimes. Listen, if anyone's listening to this and has one and you want to get a hold of me, scott@frogpants.com, you just like, man, I don't like mine. I will buy it from you. Okay? scott@frogpants.com. Scott wants himself a classic edition. And he does not want to go wait in line somewhere at midnight at a Target or a Walmart to do it. And if you don't, that's fine too. I'll be back with more. Stay tuned. Finally, today on the Daily Blip, all of Nintendo's Switch, let's not say all, the most important Switch game release info and announcements gleaned from this week's, and I wasn't here for this, but from the Nintendo Direct that happened on Wednesday, was it? Lots of stuff happened. Standalone docks, Payday 2's coming to the device, just to give you a taste. But here's a quick recap, okay? So if you missed it, here's what you missed. Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. That's coming out April 28th. We now have a date. Nintendo says this will have more characters, carts, and tracks unlocked from the beginning than any other Mario Kart game ever. That's probably a good idea since it's a re-release. But anyway, very much looking forward to get my hands on that. Ultra Street Fighter 2 on May 28th. 26th, rather. Sorry. They're going to include HD graphics mode as well as an original pixelated graphics setting. New fighters, Evil Ryu and Violent Ken, are coming with that. Minecraft on May 11th, that speaks for itself. More Neo Geo games on the way, like Samurai Showdown, for example. Ooh, it likes me some Samurai Showdown. Sonic Forces for holiday 2017. Sonic Mania in the summer. Two Sonic games, if you give a shit about Sonic these days. Project Makura, that comes out in the summer via the Nintendo eShop. I don't know much about that one since I didn't see the actual broadcast. Fate Extella on the 25th, Disgaea 5 complete on May 23rd. Puyo Puyo Tetris, which is awesome, is coming soon, but the demo is in the eShop now. We didn't get a date on that, though. Monopoly, fall of 2017. Sign Mora EX, summer. Let's see, Battle Chasers Night War, late summer. Payday 2, just says sometime in 2017. Namco Museum in September of 2017 and a standalone Switch dock on May 19th. So, not that exciting. I mean, what's exciting there? Mario Kart 8? Did they even talk about Splatoon 2? When's that coming? Is that next year? They did not include that in this list. Something fishy there. Anyway, I hope this will also get a sort of smattering of indie titles between now and then, because that would be really nice as well. I really like my Switch still. Played it a bit on my trip and, you know, making my way in the world today as Link in the destroyed future dystopic world of Hyrule, which is a great time for everyone involved. If you guys like this channel, do so. Like it and share it with your friends and check it out on the app. The app's the way to consume your Anchor Media. That's at the App Store on iOS or Google Play. You can get it right now. Thanks for being here. We'll be back tomorrow with more. I'll see you then. Welcome back to the Daily Blip. I'm Scott Johnson, and today is the 16th of April. It's Sunday, and a little off the beaten path, not necessarily video game topic related, which we do sometimes here on the Daily Blip. With China's help, the Fate of the Furious, or Furious Fate, or however the hell they put the 8 in there in the title. Anyway, it broke the Star Wars opening weekend record, hauling in an amazing $532.5 million globally in its opening weekend. Jeez Louise. That's pretty crazy. That beats Star Wars The Force Awakens, which opened December 28th, 2015 in North America, but did not premiere in China until the 9th of January. And so that made a difference. So $190 million in China on opening weekend, about $90 million more than it did here in the U.S. So those two things combined really put it over the top. Some people like it. Some people say it's the best film in the series, and many are saying it's the worst in the series. Or the worst since 2002's Too Fast, Too Furious, if you can believe it's been that long. Anyway, there you go. Star Wars, doing its thing. Also, in a tiny, tiny bit of additional news that's got nothing to do with Star Wars, The Fast and the Furious, or any of that, the Joy-Con battery pack extension is coming. So I don't know if you guys heard about this, but they are going to sell a battery pack that attaches to the bottom of your Joy-Con and creates additional battery life. So if you're looking for extended play periods where it has not been attached to the Switch and charging, then your problems are solved. Or at least for a nominal fee. So anyway, it looks a little clunky. It's a little fat. It kind of hangs on there weird, but it's better than nothing. So while you're at the Fast and Furious 8, maybe stop by a Target eventually and grab yourself a battery pack for your Switch controllers, for your Joy-Cons. There's more. Stay tuned. Hey guys, it's Scott again, and I got some good news for indie lovers, fans of roguelikes, and space adventurers alike. Everspace is coming out of early access on May 26th. I bought that game, obviously in early access some number of months ago, and really, really enjoyed it. Have come back to it numerous times. They keep making changes and updates that I like. I'm very excited about a final release. And for those who don't know what's up, it is a roguelike-ish sci-fi VR-enabled starfighter shooter thing. The closest thing I compare it to is like FTL, but imagine if FTL let you sort of fly around the zones you port to and like scavenge for stuff, fight off enemies, scan the area, that sort of thing before you decide to jump to a new system. Getting fuel so you can go to the next one and so on. It's just like FTL, but in a beautifully rendered Unreal 4 engine rendered space. It's absolutely gorgeous. And really, really fun to play. So there's a brand new trailer for it out. There are multiple ships now. When I started playing it was a single ship. But every time you die, you get to go back and carry some other stuff with you. The one thing I don't know for sure is if they have added or rather changed or fixed the terrible voiceover that the game has. That's some really bad, like... But the computer that's on your ship's okay, but you are terrible. You say things like, we've got to find out if there's any fuel here. And then the robot ship will say, scanning complete. No threats found or whatever. And it's not very often. It's super, like, far and in between that you get any dialogue from your ship or yourself. But man, your personal talking is bad. Real bad. Like Jill and Barry Resident Evil 1 kind of bad. Here's what you can expect for new features to be added before the release of the game. A mysterious alien race referred to as the Ancients. Ancient structures which work as shortcuts. They've added glyphs, the second kind of enhancements to your ship. Added functionality, animation cockpit views for all player ships. Option to hide HUD and cockpit view. A new device called the Missile Turret. That seems cool. Game's really good. And you should check it out if you haven't yet. Again, that's Everspace. Think of it as EverQuest, but in space. But not EverQuest at all, because that's not a good comparison. And it is out, finished in May. So if you've held off this long, maybe you wait until then. Or if you're like me, you're already enjoying it now. Either way, you can't go wrong. Everspace. Catch it.
We
We now know everything we need to know about the Star Wars Battlefront 2 release, what it comes with, and what you'll get in lieu of a normal season pass thing. Okay, because normally these games, these big AAA titles they launch, they're like, here's the season pass, and here's everything you're going to get. And EA has walked back developer claims that the game won't even have one. I mean, some people were excited about that, because I kind of get tired of getting nickel and dimed on stuff after the full game is released, but some people were real upset that they couldn't have that, especially with this new story-driven game. They made it official yesterday. They said that this is that they're not going to be doing a season pass. However, EA came out and said, well, we're going to do something else. It's kind of like that, but not the same. They're not saying what it's going to be. And they said this: while we're not ready to confirm any live service plans just yet, we can say that this is that we've heard the feedback from our Battlefront community loud and clear. We know they want more depth, more progression, and more content, so we're focused on delivering that in every dimension of Star Wars Battlefront 2. We'll have more to share on our on our plan soon. Somebody on the DICE team later said the community's falling apart. Said the community's falling apart because not many people are playing the different modes. And then mysteriously, this was added by the DICE developer. I cannot talk about the specifics of this, but we have something very different in mind that will allow you to play longer, be more invested in the game without having a fragmented community. So we don't know. We don't know what's going on. But EA is not interested in bad PR that's rustling around this thing. I never buy into season passes initially. To me, that's like pre-ordering, and I freaking hate that. But, hey, if you're telling me Battlefront 2 is going to be more playable, more longer, which is not even a sentence, then I'm in. I'm all in. November. Put that down in your books. Don't pre-order it. Get it in November. Time to say goodbye to an old friend. Well, that is if you considered Peter Moore an old friend. He certainly was an old friend of the video game business, and he is leaving it. He is saying farewell as the corporate front man to various companies in the video game business. And he put a letter together and posted a video talking about this thing. It's his last day in the game business. He signed off with a farewell letter and video, and this is a guy who, you know, all the way back from the Sega days, all the way up to his current work with EA in EA Sports. He says in his letter, "I was merely the front man for your brilliant achievements." Let's play part of his video. Sega. And a Dreamcast guy. I forgot about that. He's like your Dreamcast man, right? I've been reading books of old, the legends. And yeah, I don't know why this video. Alright, it's just all pictures of Peter Moore doing stuff. I was hoping there was going to be more there as far as, like, him saying things. But anyway. He says he will miss everything there is to miss about this industry. This is a guy who, you know where he's going. He's working as a new chairman for the soccer team he loves, Liverpool FC. He was born in Liverpool. He worked there as a gym teacher, got a master's degree in California, and then spent years as an executive for a sports show, manufacturers, and that kind of stuff. But he made the jump to video games in the 90s, and that's how we know him. We know him from his Dreamcast days. He helped launch that thing. He was also all up in Microsoft and the launch of Halo. Didn't he come out with a Halo 2 tattoo? Wasn't he the guy that did that? Or Halo 3 was tattooed on his arm or something. Anyway. He was the front man for a lot of stuff. I feel weird about him leaving. Like, I honestly do. It's you know, it's Peter Moore. It's a big deal. It's a bit like having Miyamoto. Nah, it's not quite like having Miyamoto retire or something, right? Not quite. But, whatever. It's a big deal. He's a big name. It's weird. And a final note today. Professor Layton's next game is hitting mobile, and it's coming there first this summer. So it's very next game, meaning not an old game, not a remix, nothing like that. Professor Layton's next video game is coming to mobile first and then a 3DS version later. We don't have a date on any of that, but we do have the date for iOS and Android. That's July 20th. It will be called Layton's Mystery Journey. Catriel and the Millionaire's Conspiracy. It will see a worldwide release with a variety of languages on launch day, and it will be free to play. Or will not be free to play, I should say. This is just a straight up buy game. So that's cool. Unlike previous games, though, this one stars his daughter. Her name is Catriel. I've not played many of these games, so forgive me if she's common already or I should know her. She's a skilled sleuth as her old man, it says, although we'd argue that her partners in mystery solving, a boy her age and a dog, aren't quite as cute as her dad's best friend, Luke. But fine, whatever. I don't care. I think it's great. This is a revered, beloved series that I have a lot of friends who are way into. And now you all don't have to wait for a cartridge on your, you know, big fat Nintendo system. You can grab it right up on mobile. And it sounds like straight up pay for it and not worry about microtransaction bullcrap. So not free to play or anything like that. Anyway, that's good news for everybody. It's going to do it for us. Hey, guys, thanks for listening. We love doing this on Anchor. And when I say we, I mean I love doing it. I hope you guys like it as well. Get the app so that you get the best experience possible and clap. Use the little clap feature there. Then I can tell you guys like some of the stuff I'm saying. I can help tailor future episodes to sort of, focus in on the things you seem to like the most. That's on the iOS and Android app stores, Google Play, that is. And you can also find it at anchor.fm if you want to go link and find all the links there. It's going to do it for me. I'll be back tomorrow with a whole bunch more. See you guys then. Have a great one.